Wow. Plated Time has landed in 1934. The Great Depression, the Dust Bowl, all going on during 1934. But culinarily, what was going on? Everybody's heard the term bread lines and soup, you know, kitchens, what have you. But what does it all mean? Well, you're going to be able to check that out on Plate and Time 1934, the historical plate that gives you what you're looking for. It won't be just dust, I promise you. The recipes that we find throughout this episode, as well as the history behind it and the research, definitely sign up for the newsletter. That way you can get all of that sent to your inbox. You can go to culinaryconvo.com, sign up in the middle of our page underneath the videos and all the good media that we got. Or you can just send me an email directly, culinaryconvopod@gmail.com, and I'll get you signed up. And then definitely check us out on YouTube, watching us. Make sure that you can see what the food is like, who the people are, what's going on. It's all great fun. I got both of my cats sitting next to me here. I got one sleeping on my dresser behind me, and then I got my Benny. He's watching the little dial go across as I record this. Oh, cute little guys. But anyways, you can see pictures of them on the newsletter or on our website. But definitely go check us out on all the social media. Subscribe, follow, and rate us on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. It helps people find us, believe it or not. And if you want to support the podcast and have other people support us so we can keep providing this all the time, I would love to do a daily podcast. Go to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support, which should be on the Spotify page, I believe, and you can support the podcast. But the other people who are supporting this podcast, the sponsors, we'll let them have a word, and we will get back to Plate in Time 1934. Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Plate in Time 1934. That's right, 1934, we're in the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and things are happening, and then Joel showed up.
Hello, 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 hello.
Yeah, welcome to chaos.
Oh, this wait, week, that's I'm today. I'm going to do the entire podcast like I've got an old English accent.
All right, great. Well, 1934. Yeah, yeah. 1934, as you can see on this picture here, just filled with highlights, you know, great, wonderful things. For everybody out there in podcast land, please check us out on YouTube. Go to culinaryconvo.com. You can see our videos there, as well as prior episodes. You can go to our merch shop, and you can see a picture of Joel. Look at that.
Yeah, you could stare longingly into my deep blue eyes.
Look at those things.
You can barely see them through how much I have to squint when it's sunny outside. And it was overcast that day, so yeah. My version of sunny is not that high.
Yeah,
but
see?
You can stare into the teeny amounts that you can see them.
Yeah, all of this enticing. And, yeah, you can go to all of our socials, whether it's TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, all the socials. All of them. All of them.
You can find us anywhere.
Anywhere you can find us.
You can
but
to
anyways,
dulcet tones or look at our pretty pictures.
Yeah, yeah. But see, I'm telling you, everybody head that way. culinaryconvo.com. But Plate in Time, 1934, from foodreference.com. They were telling us that the Royal Crown Cola is introduced by Nihai Corp. In 1934.
I never had any of that.
RC Cola? You never had RC Cola?
Nope.
It is, from what I remember, granted, it's been like, I would say I was like 9 or 10 the last time I had it. Tasted like Diet Coke, and it was supposed to be a regular Royal Cola.
Huh. Huh.
It's odd. Very odd. And there's some people that, like, that is their brand, is RC. They're rare people, because I think it might cause things. But they're rare people. And it's, yeah. But RC Cola, still hanging on strong today. How? I don't know. But it's there.
Rebranding.
Yeah. And then in 1934, something that was discontinued not too long ago, Wild Cherry Lifesavers. Yeah.
You can get they were discontinued. Whole
rolls of Wild Cherry Lifesavers. I remember there was somebody in my life, I can't remember if it was like an uncle, aunt, grandparent, I can't remember, that loved Wild Cherry Lifesavers. They had them like in the individual clear cellophane, mm-hmm. Pack yeah. things. And I just remember being like, why do people go so crazy for Wild Cherry? I don't get it. Like, I wanted all the other flavors, right? Like, I was tired of getting just red.
I want the variety.
Right, right. I was like, why do people buy just this one? I didn't get it at the time. And what is the difference between cherry and wild cherry? Do you know?
Wild cherry is more wild. Probably.
Don't lie to our audience, Joel, okay?
Well, I don't know, so I made it funny. And then you didn't laugh at all.
I know. I think whenever it says wild cherry, they're almost, like, that's the instinctual, like, hey, if you like other wild cherries, like Pepsi or, like, all these other, get the wild cherry, Lifesavers. And it's like, come on. Stop.
I mean,
it.
I know that they're just supposed to be like, more natural cherry flavor, cherry Lifesavers. So that's probably what they're going for, but shut up.
I know.
It's wild cherry. It's mean they're wild cherry. Wild. They're out in the forests or whatever. And I mean, is there a difference in the taste? I don't even know. I couldn't imagine it.
Yeah. I think that Lifesaver interns. They just run outside and all the managers are like, listen, here's five duffel bags. If you don't come back with five duffel bags worth of wild cherries, we're going to have to discontinue production.
Don't taste the same as the homegrown ones.
Yep, exactly. And one day, one of the interns showed up with three. And it was like,
we had to chop his hands off.
Yeah, we have to chop his hands off, and we got to discontinue Wild Cherry Lifesavers. Can't get enough wild cherries anymore. Climate change.
Wild cherries are moving up norther and norther now.
They're no. You used to be able to get wild cherries in Georgia. Now, I got to go all the way up to friggin' Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Why would I want to live in Tennessee?
A long way for wild cherry.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to go to hillbilly land for wild cherries. Like, man. But what's anyway, next? The musical comedy Caviar was on
Caviar.
Forest Theater in New York City. Look at that dog.
So you like older movies, though. Have you ever seen this?
No.
No?
I have no idea what this is about. It's some lady, and she has a dog. I'm guessing the dog is called Caviar, because it's a black Scotty. That's what I'm guessing.
Maybe.
I don't know. No
or
idea.
They just throw caviar at this lady while she's holding the dog.
You know what so this was a thought I had back. It was like a YouTube video. I can't remember if it was like a BuzzFeed Worth It or whatever. All I could think in my head was, I want a super soaker. And I want a huge can of caviar. I want to put the caviar in the super soaker and shoot people with the super soaker and caviar in it. So that when it hits them, the caviar might burst. And then it's like a stinky water gun. I don't know why. Like, I'm just sitting there thinking like, that's a great invention.
That would be funny.
This would be hilarious. And then shortly thereafter, it was just like, just flew away. It just went away
with the other mad ideas that you have.
Yeah, with all the other great ideas.
You didn't write that one down?
I didn't, yeah. It just was in there, and then right now it came back all because of caviar. Like, I think every time I see the word or see caviar, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Super Soaker. Like, and it would be so wasteful too. Like, can you imagine how much money you're pumping out of that Super Soaker?
Yeah, that's what rich kids Super Soaker with.
Yeah,
just caviar.
Just caviar.
Buckets and buckets of caviar.
Yeah, Dad, can I have another caviar bucket? No, Jenny. I'm telling you, you gotta stop fighting with your brother with the Super Soakers and the caviar. man, caviar. I'm betting it's the dog. I did not research what caviar is. It's not on Broadway or any theaters anymore. That's all I know.
Which means it wasn't great.
Yeah, couldn't have been all that great. And if somebody's like, Devin, caviar is one of the best Broadway plays.
It was actually really good, and it ran all the way up until caviar's death
in
1936. So
it was really good for its time.
For
you
2 years.
Know that. For 2 years.
Excellent. Caviar was a genius dog.
Yeah. If anybody wants to drop a line at culinaryconvopod@gmail.com and tell me about caviar, I will be more than happy to listen because I'd be like, oh my God, engagement? and then I will hear you out. I will hear you out about caviar. But anyway, something that caviar goes great on. Ritz crackers. That's right. Ritz crackers were introduced by the National Biscuit Company, or Nabisco.
Okay. I actually never, like, put that together.
Yeah.
National Biscuit Company.
Nabisco. Yeah. Yeah. They were all in, you know, break rooms, what have you, and they're like, man, I don't like working at Nabisco. And
that literally might be where it came from.
Yeah. And this is a one-pound box of Ritz.
That's a lot of Ritz.
That seems like a lot of Ritz.
Yeah.
One
as much
pound.
As I love them. Yeah. I love Ritz crackers.
They're so buttery.
They are. They're so buttery.
They're so good. Like, adult Lunchables, if you don't have Ritz, what are you doing?
Like, you picked the wrong one.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? This is a friggin' joke? No, this is adult Lunchables time.
This is serious business.
Yeah, this is serious business. It's practically charcuterie in your hand. Please take it seriously.
Oh my God. It literally is a travelable charcuterie.
Yeah.
No, I did not need you to make that make sense in my head. That's disgusting. I'll never have an adult Lunchable ever again. For respect of charcuterie boards. No. I can't. Can't
see, what I always thought would be
I'm coming
really
to
good.
Oregon, and we're going out to the state parks, so we got to get some adult Lunchables, though.
Yeah, we're bringing something. Adult Lunchables. Yeah, yeah.
Somebody everybody's be like, what's like, that? It's charcuterie.
Yeah. Did you bring the 15-year-aged goat cheese? Yes, I did, along with our jamón from Spain. And it's like, oh, yes, and then we're like, and Ritz! Everybody's like, oh, those poor people. We're like, get the Super Soakers of caviar, please, we must go.
I'll be busy with my pizza one where it gives you the dessert pizza and you have to squirt out that questionable brown stuff onto it that tastes akin to chocolate.
Right.
Yeah. It's near. Yeah. It's close. Yeah. And then
the oregano, it like ages in that red stuff. It's not even tomato paste anymore.
No.
And it, yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah. And those were the ones I always wanted. And my mom, she was not the cool mom. She did not get me Lunchables. She was like, I'll make you a sandwich. I'm like, that is garbage. Please get me a Lunchable. please. And she's like,
I love Lunchables.
No. She's like, bologna and cheese. What's wrong with bologna and cheese? I'm like, one, bologna's not.
Your hands
like,
touched it, woman. No.
Yeah. Bologna's not real. You're touching it. Why?
Sealed in a pack where I clearly know that only a robot arm touched the specific ingredients. Right.
Only a conveyor belt formulated.
Yeah, brought me this delicious thing. Charcuterie simulcrum.
Yeah. And everybody knows that it's a little weird when you get the turkey or the ham, like, slickery juices from the Lunchable on your hands trying to separate the pieces of ham or turkey.
Yeah, it's unnatural.
It is. You're like, why is this wet? I don't know what that
film is.
Is it wet? Like, what the?
Sweating.
Is it just salt? It's like, what is this? It's
sweating, man. It's sweating.
Ugh.
Disgusting.
Ugh.
It's like meat that doesn't have meat properties at room temperature. So it's like rapidly losing moisture in the warm room temperature air of the tepid 69. It's just, I can't do this. Yeah. I'm going to fall apart.
Well, and it's like, it's mechanically separated ham or turkey. It has to be.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's spongy almost.
Yeah.
Which is why we have adult Lunchables today. Yeah. We're like, please, give me the real
engineering
stuff. Yeah. But the next one here, Graham Kerr, look at this guy. High fashion back in the day. Look at him.
He's got an ascot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has an ascot and a nice steaming plate of meal.
Why don't we just Photoshop a cigar right into his hand right there, man?
I know.
It's perfect.
Looks great. Graham Kerr was born. He was a British chef, cookbook author, and television cooking host, best known for the cooking show The Galloping Gourmet, produced in Canada. That's right. Old Graham Kerr.
We're
going to
have him on next week for Culinary Convo.
I wish I could be like, so listen, you were born in 1934. Cool that you were a kid during World War II and you didn't participate.
But even also, cooler, you were a kid during the time that we did this plate and time on.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's even cooler, actually.
It was the first time you were ever a kid. What was that like?
Yeah. How does it feel being on the most publicly acclaiming piece of television now that you're on the podcast?
Now that you're on this podcast that's on a digital platform that does not pay me whatsoever. Yeah. How does that feel? And he's like, well, I made it in Canada. I'm like, oh, so the same thing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And then exactly this next one here, because Graham Kerr. Yeah, if you want to reach out, Graham, please do. But the next one here, he ain't going to reach out. It's Fritz Haba. Yes. Does that name sound familiar? Fritz?
No.
Haber?
Oh, wait. No.
Yeah? No? Nothing? Well, he was a German chemist. He developed a method of synthesizing ammonia directly from nitrogen and hydrogen in 1909. This led to large-scale commercial production of nitrogen fertilizer and chemical warfare.
Oh. Okay. I was like, what, is there like a chip called Fritz or something that he made? Or
is he the guy from Utz? Yeah, it's like, no, but he's known as the father of chemical warfare.
What a horrifying gift to the world.
Yeah, yeah. I'm he's sure like, hey, look, I made this nitrogen fertilizer. It's going to help us grow so much stuff. And then some other German general was just like, we could make people's eyes burn out of their skull. Yeah. Please, Fritz, produce more.
Make a lot of it, and we're going to put it in our bombs.
First, put it in this paper bag, and then pop it over someone's head. See, you add a German accent, immediately it becomes cartoonish. But this bald guy with the weird monocle glasses, he like set up a lot of different stuff. He did good things and bad things because he's a human being and everybody's flawed. Anyways, this next one, G.D. Searle and Company, they registered Metamucil trademark, fiber supplement and laxative powder.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
They're doing the real work.
I know. They are. Yeah, they're pushing the crap. That's what I'm saying. They they know what they're doing. You know.
The stuff I have every day before a date.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Disgusting.
Hey, man.
I've heard that it helps, but I haven't tried it myself. Yeah. So,
the thing is, Metamucil, it's okay. It's all right. I'm more of a Costco Kirkland Benefiber. kind of person.
Bit of fiber.
Yeah, yeah. I'm more of that. Helps you keep you regular. You know, that's the main thing. Helps you keep
the
regular.
New sponsor of the podcast this week is Benefiber.
Yeah, it's Benefiber. Are you sitting around in your couch, but you're wearing a diaper? Get Benefiber. That'll Benefiber. Make it to where you know when you're going to have to go. All right.
Tired of feeling like you're holding back the floodgates all by yourself?
Yeah.
Benefiber here to help.
Feel plugged up, shut up, and go buy Benefiber. Stop complaining and get in the plane and fly to get Metamucil. Do it. It'll help you poo. That's what it should be, you know, advertised as.
That's what its only intention is for.
Yeah. So, Cyril and Company, if you want to hire me as your new ad person, feel free. I'm a Benefiber man, but I could easily switch over.
This is the problem with all the blatant times. It makes us dredge up these companies that have almost faded into obscurity from the human mind.
Yeah.
And then we're just like, would you like to give me money?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to provide funds? They're like, no. No.
We're not on the internet. That's probably what it is.
Probably. Yeah. They're on
Why
the internet.
Would we change
just
anything for, about what we're doing.
Yeah.
Don't change anything.
Just not going to change it. Nope.
Keep making poo fiber.
Yep. Keep making your fiber. Make people regular. That's what you need to do.
Not beg this next one for money.
The Central Soya Company. Yeah. The Central Soya Company was founded by Dale W. McMillan in Decatur, Indiana.
Man.
Yeah. And it was soybeans and livestock feed. Yeah.
It's pretty
cool. It was a big thing for Decatur, Indiana when they showed up. I mean, look at that.
And
probably created like
have an
40
opinion
jobs.
On them if they did something that we mentioned in the previous one. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I love tofu.
Yeah, tofu's not bad.
Yeah.
I love it in miso soup.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. It's very, very good in miso soup.
See, we're just giving away our opinions for free. We got to move on.
I know. Yeah, I got to stop that. Because in Indiana, what they were saying was, oh, thank God we have this new mill. It's going to bring livestock feed and soybeans for all those people taking out the drought. That's right. 1934, worst drought in U.S. history took place in the Great Plains and covered over 75% of the country.
Woo.
Yeah. It was the height of the Dust Bowl era.
The Dust Bowl.
Yeah. A lot of topsoil.
You don't think about your farms before you do them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, let's be honest. We took a lot of land from animals, Native Americans, other countries. We did all this stuff. And then we were like, hey, 40 acres and a mule. And for some reason, we thought, like, this will do it. And
it's all going to work out.
Yeah, no.
There's going to be no more steps that we have to take to make sure this works out.
Yeah. You know, if they...
If we could go back in time and basically take control of U.S. policy during this time, it could have been so easy to avoid. I mean, you would have had to have started in, like, the 1900s and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, early 1900s, so.
Yeah.
But, like, we could have literally swaths of America that are still able to produce food.
Yeah.
And this wouldn't have happened. Like, it would be great. We could be a big, huge, I mean, we are a huge food producer, but we could have been, like, big in the game.
Could have had more trains, more buses, more planes.
Yeah, we could have.
Yeah, could have.
Could have done it.
Could have done that.
I'm still angry about the trains, so.
Yeah. Well, and
I'm taking an Amtrak to get up to you, by the way.
Yeah. See?
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. I'm taking a plane because I'm a coastal elite hiding in the Midwest.
hiding in the Midwest.
Hiding in the Midwest.
Man.
But
yeah.
I would love to have big old trains
coming
across the whole country.
Well, and I was thinking was, what if, you know, our generation, millennials or Gen Z, what if we were told, hey, you're going to get 40 acres and a I don't know, a tilling machine.
You mean I'm going to go and get to play Stardew Valley in real life? Yeah. And that's going to be my job? Oh my gosh. What a horrible fate.
Yeah. I'm going to own property?
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, exactly.
40 acres.
We can't get a quarter of an acre without selling a kidney. Like, God almighty. Anyway, sorry about that divergent
thing. If they
would
have done this next thing sooner, then it all would have worked out.
It would have worked out. Taylor Grazing Act. It gave the U.S. Department of the Interior power to regulate grazing on public lands in the West. Yeah.
Woo!
They looked around and they were like, hey, are all these cattle supposed to be here? And the farmers were like, I don't know. And we were like, yeah, let's cut that out, shall we?
Actually control this and pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just letting them go hay wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the next one here, that's Tom Connolly from Texas. Texas Tom Connolly. Jones Connolly Act authorized appropriations for research to eliminate disease from beef and dairy herds in 1934.
See, you got the government doing stuff and it's freaking cool.
Yeah. And imagine if you would have let the disease run rampant, we'd all be eating tofu. Decatur would be a massive city because we let all the cows die. We wouldn't have cheeseburgers, hamburgers, none of that.
No.
We
would just,
yeah. So if you love cheeseburgers, thank Tom Connolly. If you're a vegan, you should hate Tom Connolly because he let beef run wild in Texas.
My gosh.
Connolly family, I am not saying that Tom was a bad person. I'm just saying.
I mean, yeah.
If he made different decisions, we would not maybe have some things that are not good right now.
Exactly. But see, this is the year after FDR's taking office.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all these acts just beep, 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 beep. Which, you know, it was a time of crisis, but I think we're in a time of crisis now. So, which, you know, Biden's been doing not horrible for the last couple of weeks. Not horrible. I'm not saying that he's doing good or great. Yeah. Just not horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, kind of looks like Tom Connolly here. They're both old.
Old men. Old white men all do look alike.
Yeah, they
do. It's because we revert to being more like babies.
Well, that and we look British. Look at that. Our noses get bigger.
Have you seen how similar King Charles and Biden look? That's all I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying.
They do look exactly. They look a little,
they're identical. Have they ever been in the same room?
One? Yeah. Have they ever been in the same room?
Yeah. That's good question. We're asking the real questions.
The real questions here on the pond.
Yeah, on Culinary Convo.
Yeah, you guys want to leave Joe Rogan for a different crazy podcast? Show up here!
Show up here!
We'll talk about food. Everyone loves food. And we're going to talk about how old white men are all the same guy.
They're all the same dude. Yeah.
All the same dude.
Mitch McConnell is Charles. Is Prince Charlie. We know this.
Prince Charlie. We know it.
Yeah. We know this. Or King Charlie. Now.
Yeah. King Charlie. What? I said it correctly the first time. I'm just saying. Yeah. So, British public, don't come for me. I mean, British monarchy, don't come for me. British public, you seem to be pretty cool right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But the next one here, Carrizo Citrus Rootstock released base for more than 60%. Of all U.S. citrus trees.
Wow.
One Carrizo citrus is the base seed for more than 60% of citrus trees. Because they are highly cold and heat tolerant.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
That can be like a downfall, and it can be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. Another crazy thing, though, happened in 1974, and that was when David Wesson died. You know Wesson oil, like cooking oil? Oh, yeah. He was the guy. Yeah, he was an American chemist who developed a method to make cottonseed oil edible. Cottonseed oil has almost no taste, so it allows the flavors of other foods to come through. It is used in the manufacture of margarine, salad dressings, and commercially fried foods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, old David Wesson. He showed up and was like, guys, I made this new sludge that's better than the old sludge.
Yeah.
Use it. Use this.
Pretty good stuff.
It's great stuff. It comes from cotton. Yeah. And everybody's like, well, what about peanut oil? He's like, I don't want to hear it. And so then he bought the peanut oil place. Then he bought vegetable oil. And now he's just an oil magnate. But not the bad oil. The, like, just food oils.
Yeah.
The red, good not oil the tar magnate. Black oils, but, like, you know, food oils.
Yeah. Good stuff.
That's
that you cook with.
Yeah, that you cook with. Yeah. Way to go, David Wesson. The next one here, 1934, Pepsi was like, hey, competitors, I'm going to introduce a 12-ounce bottle for the same price that you sell a 6-ounce bottle.
Boom. That's how capitalism used to work.
Yeah.
That was the good old days, actually, when, like, you would have literal leaps happening in production where you could actually do that stuff. And they made it cost-saving for the customer. That's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. A nickel. Got you 12 ounces of Pepsi.
Instead of six. That's basically like telling the market that you're in, just like, hey, enough.
Yeah.
we can share the abundance.
Yeah. And obviously the other answer to that from like Coca-Cola is like, yeah, no, our product at 6 ounces is worth a nickel.
Yeah.
We have a better product. That's why it is more expensive than your 12 ounces
while of they're like
syrup.
Water. Freaking out, being like, do we need to make more? How do we do that?
We don't do anything. We just keep selling we always do. Yeah, we hold the line. Yeah. Oh, man. We act like they're all pirates and bandits, but really they were just like...
greedy people.
Totally. Yeah, they were just like, when's the next time I'm going skiing? How many trains or railways do I have to take to get there?
Because these are like the top dogs. These are the companies that are still here.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
But you know who didn't get to hang out with Mr. PepsiCo and have a 12-ounce? Carl Paul Gottfried Lind. He died. He was born in 1842. He was a German engineer who invented mechanical refrigeration. He developed it so beer could be brewed year-round. Yeah.
Humanity would do anything for its alcohol fix.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, Carl was like, my beer went warm. I am never allowing this to happen again. he went off. And somebody went, oh, Carl, go off, queen. And he just started making mechanical refrigeration. Yeah. Man. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy because that's really useful tech. So
it is. And then Kalen's restaurant says, and it claims that cheeseburgers were first served in 1934 at their restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like, we put cheese and the cow together. We did it.
Just seems like a bit showy. Just like we would have figured it out eventually. Like,
right.
It's okay.
Right. Yeah.
The concept's really, really easy. Just stacking stuff.
We've had mac and cheese since the founding fathers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mac and cheese is good stuff.
Eventually, someone would have said, hey, you know, beef and mac and cheese go really well together. And then somebody's like, oh, should we put cheese on a beef sandwich?
We could just make, like, the bread on the outside of the cheese and then layer it.
Bop, bop, bop. Yeah, yeah. And then marching bands were developed so that they could hold a parade for those people that created that. And when you're at home working or at an office working, doing digital code to let somebody check their bank account for something, remember that all they did was add beef and cheese together. That is all they did.
Butterfly effect that just had the biggest ramifications of the known universe.
Right,
right. 200 years from now, they've got AI-piloted spaceships, and they're like, exactly. This never would have been possible without the cheeseburger being made.
At
Kalen's restaurant.
Yeah. Anytime you're like, man, I am struggling to pay rent and I'm working, you know, 50 to 60 hours a week at this, like, you know, office or a addiction shelter or whatever. And then all that Kalen guy did was go, if we had beef and cheese together
on bread. That's crazy.
I don't know if it'll work.
And Kalen's like, we did that. We did that.
Yeah, we did it.
Well,
we did
that was ours. It's going to be the marketing strategy for the next century.
Right. It's literally going to go across the globe and people will pay billions to eat this. You're welcome. And yeah, Kalen's looks like that right now. That is what they look like right now. They have graffiti on the side of their building. And they have a sign that it looks cool, but it's a little rundown.
Yeah. And the marketing's working out great.
Yeah. It's going swimmingly.
It was us first.
We did it. We did it fast. Great, Kalen. We're going to go now.
So happy for you. Bye.
Bye.
Glad that journey for you. See ya.
Yeah. Later. But somebody who didn't try to show off and didn't try to act like it was a big deal, the burrito. That's right. Foodtimeline.org basically states that in 1934, it was the first time that somebody put a recipe on paper for burritos. That's right. So burritos, they were invented, you know, crazy long ago.
Yeah.
We have no idea. But an actual recipe. A burrito, a tortilla rolled and cooked on a griddle, then filled with a variety of condiments. Burritos are a Mexican-American staple. The word from Spanish for little donkey first saw print in America in 1934. If fried, the burrito becomes a chimichanga.
Yeah. So does chimichanga stand for fried little donkey?
That's a good question. That is a good question. Here, we're gonna do chimichanga. We're gonna do some quick research.
There's
here.
There's no way it means
hold
something
on,
else.
Hold on,
sure.
Hold on. English to Spanish.
Burned little donkey.
No, it's fried. Fried little donkey. Burrito frito.
So why isn't it burrito frito? Why is it chimichanga?
Why is it chimichanga?
What's chimichanga stand for?
Let's see here. Okay, chimichanga. Just chimichanga. That's all it. What the heck?
Okay. Okay, go home, Spanish. You're drunk.
Yeah, you're drunk, Spanish. I swear.
That's good.
That is good. Yeah, so
you wouldn't have
next
learned
time,
that anywhere unless you were on the Culinary Convo podcasts.
Exactly. Like, welcome to the Culinary Convo universe, where we check out the real questions.
The real questions of why does fried burrito not
called a burrito frito.
It's not the same thing.
Oh, what if that is what you do from now on? Anytime you go to any type of Spanish Mexican restaurant, yeah, I'll have the combo plate with a burrito frito. They're like, "Do you mean the chimichanga?" You're like,
"Do you mean the chimichanga?"
Burrito frito. That is a fried little donkey.
I want a fried little donkey. Thank you.
I want a fried
little donkey.
You
can just put it in the back
donkey.
Of my truck. Thank you.
The flatbed is outside.
Also, what's the definition of little in this case? Just like short in stature, or are they like little in age? I don't like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's Burrow and then Ito.
Ito.
That just makes it small. Ito. Okay. So taquito.
Yeah, a little taco, right?
I would think so. Yeah. But there's got to be something about rolled, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be. I'm moving on to the next one. Burrito's taking up too much of my time.
We got to get through these.
Yeah.
We got to impart you guys with knowledge.
Yeah. The next one here, Campbell's Soup. They said, cream of mushroom, please. Soup is ancient. So are mushrooms. A survey of historic cookbooks confirms creamy mushroom soups were cultivated by several cultures and cuisines.
What did most, you ask for?
I don't know, because I like sucked in air. It was weird. Anyway, mostly Northern European. Cream and mushroom soup, as we Americans know it today, traces its roots to these old world traditions. Many early 20th century American cookbooks contain recipes for cream and mushroom soup. Period articles published in the New York Times confirm the popularity of creamy mushroom soups served at the beginning of a meal. The practice of using manufactured soups, Campbell's Cream and Mushroom, was introduced in 1934 as culinary substitutes took hold in the 1930s. The Great Depression was all about saving money, and canned cream of mushroom happened to be in the right place at the right time. Yeah.
Good for her.
Go off, cream of mushroom. Go off. Way to go. Condensed soup.
Yeah. Woo. Woo. I've never been a fan of creamy mushroom, though. Cream of mushroom is just...
I like cream of mushroom. I'll admit that... A legit cream of mushroom is like super good. And what I mean by that is just you saute your mushrooms, you have the cream, you make it, you know, what have you. But cream of mushroom's okay. It's, I think that it hits the earthy note a little too hard on the head at times, you know? Yeah. You gotta have acid, you gotta have zest, you gotta have something else to like off balance it, kinda. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good and then, base.
Right. Right. So 1934 to 63 years later, Jebediah was in Campbell's and said, we need to put this in a glass jar. Then they started selling it out of glass jars. Yeah.
What?
And it didn't work out well. No. So they went back to cans.
Why would you do that? It looks like baby food. Are these people stupid?
They are. Very dumb.
What in the world?
Not Campbell's as a whole, but whoever that idea didn't translate.
Disgusting. I don't like that.
I know.
Silly but people the, with their but silly hey, ideas.
Hey, whoever was at Campbell's that day was not where childhood wonder was when Hawaiian Punch was created. That's right. In 1934.
Okay.
Yeah, 1934. A.W. Leo, Tom Yates, and Ralph Harrison were living together, I'm sure, as friends.
Love that energy.
Developed the first Hawaiian Punch recipe in a converted garage in Fullerton, California. They this wanted is how a truck.
Everything like good gets started, though.
Totally.
Bill Gates came out of a garage.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs came out of a garage.
Yeah.
There's lots of people that, you know, they start, it's actually out of their parents' garage. That's the trick. Yeah. They don't tell you.
They don't tell you that. But hey, you know what the other cool fact about that is I and you as millennial, we don't have a freaking garage.
I don't have a garage.
I could do so much stuff in a garage. And I my don't garage have one.
Is my body. That's my garage.
There you go. Yeah, you park a lot of things in your garage.
Yeah, I park a lot of things in my garage. There's like a whole tool chest that has got useless mental illnesses in it. And it's all around just like a really depressing space with barely anything on the white tan walls.
Yeah, I took some advice from
that is cold or hot and never comfortable.
Right.
That's my body.
Yeah. Yeah, I took advice from this bee woman. First name's Cardi. She said park a Mack truck in a garage And I took that seriously.
They say life's like a box of chocolate, and your body's like a garage.
Life is like a box of chocolate, and your whole body's a garage to put things in it.
This is the specific thing I'm getting at. It's things that you barely ever use.
Barely use that thing.
It's more of a storage space than anything.
Right. It's meant to become a canvas of things.
You think I'm starting a business in this body?
No.
That's for 1934, Joel.
Right.
2022, right. Joel. Nope. He's struggling to get stuff out of here. He's exactly. Like trying to clean it up.
He's like, what is this?
This is a box that just says dishes on it, and then it's just got paper.
How did this happen? Yeah, they wanted a tropical tasting syrup to add to their line of ice cream toppings sold under the trade name Pacific Citrus Products Company. Leo's Hawaiian Punch, as the brand was called at the time, was sold to area restaurants, soda fountains, and ice cream manufacturers. The Leo's was dropped from Hawaiian Punch. Yeah, really. recipe. Several years later, the main ingredients of the first recipe were shipped from the Hawaiian Islands, thus the origin of the name. The U.S. Patent Office gave Leo's Hawaiian Punch its trademark on June 9th, 1938.
Wait, so yeah. It was sold illegally in 1934?
Yeah, for 4 years. Yeah, for four years. Okay. Out of a garage, they sold syrups. It's
Leo's Hawaiian Punch, which makes it sound like it's from his blood or something. That's like, it's red liquid. Not a good look.
Yeah.
That's not where good is Leo? For your advertising. Come on.
Where's Leo? Where's
he tied to a wall, and they're just bleeding him out, and they're like, sweet Hawaiian Punch.
We keep having to put it in a bowl because so much is coming out.
This tastes pretty good. We could make a business out of this.
We can make a business. Yeah. Anyways, another red thing that comes out of garages sometimes. Tomatoes, specifically from the web archive from Rutgers.edu. The Rutgers tomato was introduced in 1934 by Rutgers breeder Lyman Schermerhorn as an ideal canning tomato at the height of the canning industry in New Jersey. Not only did this provide a top-performing tomato for New Jersey's canning industries, Campbell's, Heinz, and Ritter, continued to be the preferred choice of 75% of commercial growers for the remainder of the 20th century.
Wow.
Yeah. 75% of the industry used one type of tomato. So if you were ever like, Campbell's tomato soup is totally different from Heinz. Heinz uses subpar tomato. They were full of it. They're all using Rutgers.
The illusion of choice.
Yeah.
The illusion of choice, even in 1934.
Yeah.
Also, the bad thing with that, it's another one of these situations where it's like, okay, you could make a lot of these tomatoes, but like, what happens if there's a freaking virus or not virus, but you know, a disease,
bacteria,
that just hits whatever. All of these tomatoes? Like, that's not a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to take whatever the like phenotypes are of like those genes that are giving it its like hardiness to be able to grow really well. It's a good thing to take that stuff out, but like, you know, we got to play God, you know, smarter than this, babes. Right. We got to put some variety in it.
Right. Yeah.
We're going to mess with this stuff.
I tell you, the Rutgers tomato, they have an awful football team, and then this happens. But no, I mean, to make it even better, though, for here, for us on Plate and Time, we're like, you know what? Before the Rutgers tomato, I'm going to go back to 1907. Because that's where we'll see everybody next time on A Plate in Time. 1934, you know, a lot of cheap eats that could fill up your plate. It'd be really good. It'd be okay. You'd do all right. You're going to get through it. A lot of dust. A lot of being broke. What have you. But it'll be okay. Gotta love it.
That's the energy we're here for in 2022 for sure. Yeah.
Gotta love it. Is that a Rutgers tomato? You gotta love it.
Yum.
Yummy.
That was
Where's
their...
Leo? I want some Hawaiian pooch.
The raspy voice
pooch.
Of the lifelong smoker for their very first commercial sounded like that. Rutgers yeah. tomatoes.
Welcome to Rutgers tomatoes. We put stuff in Campbell's, Heinz, and Ritter.
We you can like Ritter? Sell it to you. Metal yeah. is an most efficient form of packaging.
I always get catsup instead of Heinz, so I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Delicious catsup.
I wasn't rich enough to get Rutgers tomatoes.
Like, yeah. Oh, man. Jeez. I tell you. Ugh. I don't know. And I see, that's the thing. It sounds so bad, yet I've had so many tomato things. I've had yeah. tons of Heinz ketchup and tomato soup.
Changed.
Yeah,
this
nothing's
still
changed.
Definitely the
yeah.
same.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that same tomato. Yeah. It's delicious. Yeah. It's fine. You can buy them from yeah. whoever you want, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's yeah. all good. Eat your tomatoes, kids.
Eat your tomatoes. Seeds and all. Do it. That way you can grow tomatoes out of your body. Remember, garage.
Yeah, it's a garage. I was thinking that, though, like, if I had a garage, that would be a great thing to do. Like, because tomatoes yeah. will grow anywhere.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, lettuce. Then you've got, yeah. like, half the ingredients for all your salads.
And BLTs. You're 66%.
And you could combine it with
yeah.
Highlands cheeseburgers.
Yeah. Yeah. Kalen's.
Tomato, yeah. tomato.
Tomato, right? Tomatoes. Let's call the whole thing 1907. Let's.
That's how memorable yeah. you are, Kalen. I forgot yeah. how to say your name.
Worked out great for them.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think cheeseburger, I'm like, Kalen.
Kalen's.
He made the first one.
In Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah. Louisville. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, we'll see everybody next time on A Plate in Time in 1907 with its culinary wonders and financial panics. But yeah.
1907's like a little bit better because like the Depression was just coming.
Yeah, there was a big financial panic in 1907.
It's
That's
a
what
good,
I
good timeline or time period, like early 1910s,
yeah.
To buy a house that was made then because they're yes. made with actual wood.
Yeah.
Like you're going to get timber. A house that, yeah, exactly. If you get a house from 1920s, you're going to have rubber in the walls for insulation, so be careful of that. But 1910s, 1907, that's like a perfect time.
Right. Just remember, anything past that 1920s, that's what most houses you're going to be trying to buy. And those are those forever appreciate, right? Those always gain value. You know
those houses that are like majoritively glue?
Right.
That's like a really good investment.
That's the target you want. Yeah, those are great. That is a great property. You know, it's got good bones. Yeah, I've always heard that about, you know, grandparents. Oh, no, hey, they're old, but they have good bones. Like, what? No, their hips are breaking constantly. Like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm interested to see what the food will be like for 1907.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting, I think.
I think like quite a big chunk of that commercialization factor will be lowered, like just not there as much. So
it's like a good blend of industrialized and still kind of handmade.
Yeah.
Good little
quality
blend
food.
There.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So we'll see everybody next time. Remember, check us out, culinaryconvo.com. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Rate us 5 stars. Smash that like button. Do a roundhouse kick to notifications. And then also follow all of our socials. Do it. Just go in there and do that. Go to our merch store. Buy some t-shirts and stuff. Yeah. Do that. They're kind of cheap. Like, go do that.
They are actually, like, really good price. I got my 2 in the mail a couple of days ago.
It's a biscuit having a dream of being attacked, but it's in gravy, and the biscuit is laying in a bed of gravy. Oh, my gosh. It's Inception biscuits and gravy. It's amazing. You got to check it out at our merch shop and watch us on YouTube. Do it up. Share. Like crazy. Give it to all your family members for Thanksgiving, Christmas, for Halloween. Send them an episode via text. Let's do through snail mail. Just send them a link, copy, paste, a
write
link
it down on a piece of paper,
on a Word document.
Lick
yeah,
the envelope and
lick the
send
envelope
it through USPS, babes.
Yeah, yeah. What's the telegraph?
Yeah, telegraph. Yeah,
telegram, telegraph, whatever.
Telegramming. Yeah.
Do the tellas and tell all the fellas about Culinary Convo.
Western
all
Union
the gals
transactions.
Too. Yeah, Western Union. Do that to Culinary Convo.
Might be a little expensive, but you know, yeah, I think it's worth it.
It's worth it. Worth
as long
every
as you're
penny.
Not sending your money to somebody in Africa or something.
Right, right. And if you don't want that to happen, go to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support. Become a monthly supporter, but also share these episodes. Make people like us because we're good people and we share good information. Like 1934.
If there's anybody out there listening to this,
yeah,
no, this is a joke. And we won't get off of the joke.
We're not getting off. Like, it's being shared.
I mean, it is. But because of our sincerely good content, not because we're sitting here begging you.
No, this isn't begging. This is like advice. This is like fatherly, parental good advice. You know, they're like, invest in your company matched 401k. Yeah,
you guys invest in your entertainment and your knowledge on foodstuffs. Yeah.
Basically, if your mom or dad does not tell you that you need to be listening to Culinary Convo, I bet they don't love you. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and we love you, so we need to come here and listen.
Yeah, we love everyone. You're all welcome. And so it's like, just know that. And remember, if your husband or wife has not made you biscuits and gravy, move on, hun. Move on. You got to move on.
Got to move on.
Move on. Move on. They're not for you.
They're a psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if there's fried chicken. Even if there's fried chicken.
Right. That's like a telltale sign right there. Yeah. They'll make you fried chicken, but they won't make you biscuits and gravy. What is this? What is this? Anyways, thanks everyone for joining us. Joel, thank you for joining me. We will see everybody next time in 1907 on A Plate in Time. Goodbye.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
We're going shopping in 1907 for industrial things. I bet we can buy oil in a pig.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.